I think I know most of you now. That's good. And you should be able to see my screen. So for those of you that have been in the peer group over the last, you know, we've been running this, what, Ryan, now almost 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, this is season two.
Season two. Excellent. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's the third.
Yeah. No, I think January. We started in January. So yeah. So this January will be two complete years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to remind you, and for those of you that are new, like Everett, this is really meant to be an interactive peer group discussion, and most of all to focus on your questions and your challenges, and to share, you know, experiences and learnings with each other. I'll try to provide a good backdrop and you know, sort of sagely advice if I have it. But I really encourage you guys to share your own learnings and experience. The format is really, I'll start off with kind of a foundation around the topic, just to give you some background and perspective and things to think about. And then really the main part of the session is really open to your questions, and, you know, it'll go wherever you guys need it to go. So think about the kind of challenges you're having in your organization or in your roles, and let's talk about those, because we want everybody to learn and grow as part of the community. So I thought we would start off, and this is actually where we started back a year and a half ago or more, with just talking about roles and responsibilities. So what is product management, right? So for those of you that are in product management roles, this might give you, you know, some perspective on some of the challenges that you're facing. But for those of you that are, you know, working with product managers or considering product management, just some things to think about in terms of its strategic role in an organization and helping to drive successful products. So it can mean a lot of different things in technology companies. And one of the problems in most product management roles is that it gets caught up in the firefighting. Like, it's, everything's urgent, you know, everything's, has to be done today. And it's a real challenge to focus on the strategic end of things. But of course, as we all know, you know, if you get the strategy right, then the tactical stuff is a lot smoother and you can adapt more easily. So we're going to talk a little bit about what, you know, product management is, what it isn't, and then look at some tools that can help you focus on doing the job of product management. Let me start with this, which is, you know, sort of amusing. If you've seen this before, you know, you'll recognize that it kind of highlights that there are a lot of different perspectives on what product management means. So the first thing I think we should do is sort of clear up, you know, what it is, so that we're all on the same page. And I particularly like the last one in the lower right corner. You know, it's like, that's what most people experience in product management. So, and we obviously, the best practices are to try to get away from that and really, you know, be more strategic as you're doing that. So there's a couple of kind of misconceptions about product. Some people think it's like project management. Well, it is kind of, I mean, product management does involve lots of project management, but project management is really focusing on the sort of logistics of a project. Doesn't really matter what the content is, but it's more focused on, you know, delivering it on time and on budget. It's all about the sort of when things are happening, right? You can think of project, you know, management as focusing on the delivery. So you're delivering specific features or software, could be the delivery of anything. It's largely focused on timeline and schedule. So it is something that product managers need to be conscious of and aware of. And oftentimes, you know, they'll do some of it themselves in a smaller organization. In larger organizations, sometimes they have dedicated project managers to work with. So when I ran product management at Two Cows years ago, we had probably 17 different development projects going on at once. And so we had a PO, you know, project management office, and with, you know, people who specialize, who were PDMs or what it, PMPs, I guess they call it, right? And would help the, you know, the product management team of, I had 8 product managers at the time, but, you know, they needed help in managing all the details. So, so those often work very closely together. A lot of people think of it as part of development, it works very closely with development, obviously. But development is really responsible for the technology decisions. And one of the ways to think about the difference is that product management focuses on the what and the why of the product, right? And the product development focuses on the how things will get built. So that's how we work together. And you really want to be careful as a product manager to not be telling development how to build it, because that's their expertise. You know, engineers are really good at solving problems if they know what the problem is. So your role as a product manager is to help them understand what the problem is, why it's important, and what is required to solve it. And then they can figure out how it gets solved and how it, the product is going to be built. Another perspective is product marketing. And that's, of course, very closely related as well. And product, you know, product marketing teams are the ones that take the product to market. So they're the go-to-market people. And if you're familiar with a pragmatic framework, you think of sort of the left-hand side as strategic, and then you move to more go-to-market tactics and enablement. And that's really the domain of product marketing people. So focusing on things like campaigns and communication and positioning and all those sorts of things. Another one is that, you know, the product manager is sort of the CEO of the product, and you hear this occasionally, and you know, it's kind of sounds important, right? But let me tell you, it's not true. Okay. Because no one has to listen to you. You can't hire or fire anyone, and you don't have any golden parachutes like an executive. So, the reality is you're focusing on, you know, the product as a business unit for sure. But CEO is sort of not quite the right way to talk about it. And then of course, you know, product management can be seen as the catch-all bucket, you know, people who do everything else that nobody else wants to do, right? Which sometimes is the case, but not necessarily, you know, what should be. So what is a product manager? Well, at a very basic level, it's the person who's responsible for the success of the product. But, you know, let's unpack that a little bit, because that's kind of, you know, not all that clear. So when you look up the definition of it, you see that it's, you know, a sort of organizational function that deals with the planning, forecasting, and marketing of product or products at all stages of the life cycle. So we often think of product managers focused on creating new products or enhancing products, but don't forget that you can also be responsible for the end of life of a product, right? So there's a cycle there. And sometimes, you know, end of life of a product can be challenging too. So as I said earlier, it answers the question of what will get built and why it will get built, not how, okay? And my friend Saeed Khan, who some of you may have heard in the community here, likes to talk about it as a cross-functional management role focused on creating and delivering products that most importantly meet or exceed the business goals and objectives. And it's that last part that's really important, because in the context of any, you know, organization, this is about the business goals and objectives, right? And so product is really a driver of that. And in the last decade or two, products, especially in the technology space, have become a very important driver of the business objectives and goals, okay? Another way to look at it is that it's kind of the intersection of sort of 4 different perspectives. And that's, you know, these crucial areas. So, you know, business objectives clearly is one. Then market needs is another perspective that's really important. The product capabilities. So what can we do? What technology is feasible? That sort of thing. But interestingly, the 4th one, and this often isn't really acknowledged, is the role of product management is crucial in aligning the organization, the different parts of the organization, around delivering value to the customers, right? And so it's very much a cross-functional strategic role that works with all parts of the organization to make sure that they're in line on delivering a successful product or value to the customers. So this is kind of fun. It's if you can't read it, it says a product manager is a person who solves problems you can't. And two, one who does precision guesswork best on unreliable data provided by those of questionable knowledge. Okay. And then the next one is sort of similar, which is, I can see why you might be confused if you think I'm a magician. But over the last 20 years, things have gotten a lot more complex. Software products have now extended through every industry. And the sort of definition and skill set of product management has gotten a lot more complex. And of course, the advent of Scrum and Agile in particular have just sort of muddied the waters, adding even more complexity to it because you have to adapt quickly to things. So I'll pause in a moment, but I want to, tell you sort of one other thing, which is that, there's been a big change in product management, certainly in my career over a couple of decades. And it used to be, that product management was sort of a lone wolf, gathering requirements and documenting those into long MRDs, market requirement documents, and throwing that over the wall to development and, telling them to go figure it out, right? That's kind of old school. Well, it is very old school. And so since then, fortunately, product managers are very much part of a cross-functional team now. In fact, we even have multidisciplinary product teams, which I'll talk to you in a few minutes about. But their role is really to evaluate market opportunities and then determine, what's going to get built and delivered to customers. So it's a lot about prioritization and deeply understanding customer problems. And so we're going to talk about that a bit more and how you can keep that perspective in the things you're doing. So the focus is really on a couple of key areas, and you saw this in the Venn diagram earlier. So business and product objectives, understanding market needs, okay, and aligning those with our capabilities and the business goals. Then, as I mentioned, driving that cross-functional alignment, and then managing the delivery so that it gets into the marketing and adds value. So one way of seeing this, which has been particularly useful over the last, two decades since I've been doing this, is the pragmatic framework. And most of you may have heard of this. If you haven't, you can look it up. They've changed their name recently. They're now called the Pragmatic Institute. But they were really one of the original founders of the sort of discipline of product management in technology environments. So, and for those of you that aren't aware, it really came out of the role and responsibility of brand management in fast-moving consumer goods. So Procter & Gamble, in fact, one of the first product managers I ever worked with had come from Procter & Gamble and had been like the brand manager on Tide or something like that, and had moved into technology and was bringing that discipline of brand management into technology space. So that's its history. But the pragmatic framework is really useful because it reminds you that it's all about moving from the left-hand side in strategy to the right-hand side in execution. And then sort of on the top is a lot more of the strategic activities, sort of customer focused. And then as you move down to the lower left, it's really more on technology. And sometimes we as teams grow, we have a technical product manager. And then on the right, sort of right and lower right side is really the go-to-market part of product marketing. And clearly product management works with all of this, but as an organization grows, then you start to get multiple teams working in different ways together.
Sorry, Lee.
Yeah.
Question: when you do have a smaller team, and I look at that chart and I go, "Oh my gosh, that's a lot." how do you manage something like that? How do you make that maybe a little bit easier for yourself?
So, my first job as a product manager was in a development tools company, building Java developer tools, And I did all of this. I was the only product manager, right? And the only product marketing guy. So I was kind of responsible for all of it. You don't actually do all of these activities, right? What this framework is there for is to remind you of thinking about all of them and whether they're relevant for your particular situation, right? And so, you know, some you might outsource, some you might skip over, some you might spend more time on, those sorts of things. But really, it's to give you a framework so that you don't forget stuff, right? And then each one of these boxes, of course, has a lot more detail in it and that sort of thing. So we could talk about that for a long time. In fact, Pragmatic does workshops and training across this whole framework. And I'm not sure now, but I'm sure that they probably have over a dozen courses, you know, that address different parts of this. But yeah, as an organization scales, then clearly, yes, you need specialists and skilled people in different areas that have to work together as a collaborative team. And so what's happened over the last number of years is that we're starting to see, more kind of multidisciplinary product teams forming, even on a sort of smaller basis. And sometimes, like I'm working with a client right now, where literally I'm helping them to figure out how to bring together ad hoc product teams. So when they have a new product opportunity, they're going to gather people from the organization that have specific domain expertise in that area, and they work together as a team on that, bringing that product to market, and then they disband and, you know, some other team gets put together. So it can be pretty flexible or more structured. But the three key elements of it are, you know, if you start in the lower right, the sort of the business objectives, right? So is this viable? Is it a sustainable business? Is there a large enough market? Does it drive our business objectives? And then on the lower left, of course, is a development perspective, which is, can we build this? Is it even feasible? Is the technology exist, or do we have to create something, right? How much risk is there in that? And then the top one, which is actually the more recent, is the perspective of user experience. So that design UX perspective, where we really need to make the user experience good, not just the UI, but the user experience. And so there are a whole, you know, sort of field of UX designers and researchers that are really expert at this kind of stuff and bring a marvelous perspective to this. And so this team working together then is really helping to, you know, bring that balanced experience and perspective to building a successful product. So I won't spend a lot of time on it. We can come back to it later, but you know, what's happened with lean product process is a sort of staged project, a product development process. And there's the important thing about this is that there's sort of three parts to it. The first is discovery, where you're working really on deeply understanding the problem for the customer. And then once you got that, then you move into solutioning and figuring out what the optimal solutions are, what kind of innovations might be needed. You do testing and get user feedback to understand what's the most effective. And then once you've figured that out and you have validation of that, then you go into investing in the development and you actually build it for production, okay? But even in development, with agile development, you're still iterating, you're still learning as you go, you're still testing to validate things. And so it's very much a kind of scientific method, right? You have a hypothesis, you design a test for it, you run the test, you get data, and you learn from that, and then you modify the hypothesis and go forward. And so it's that kind of iterative process that has really changed in the whole technology space over the last couple of decades. You know, one of my first jobs at Alias Research in 3D graphics or 3D, you know, modeling, it was a Unix-based system used by, you know, industrial design firms in the auto companies and special effects animation in films and commercials and stuff like that. But we had a massive product and it, our development cycle was around 18 months. So literally we had 40 developers working on something for a year and a half. I mean, you're spending millions of dollars, right? And and then at the end of that, we're launching it and we're going, oh my God, I hope this works. I hope they love it. I hope somebody buys it, you know, that kind of thing. And fortunately, that's not what happens anymore because it's way too much risk in that. Now, unless you're building a, you know, a nuclear reactor or a jet airplane or something like that, then, you know, clearly those have slightly different methods, and you know, waterfall can still be pretty appropriate. But largely in technology today, especially software, we take a much more iterative approach. So I'm going to talk about sort of the elements of a great product manager and what kind of skills are there. But let me just pause for a moment. What questions, thoughts? Does that make sense to everybody? Peter, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Lee?
Good, good. Okay. I think you went through this with us before at one of the early stages, but now that you've had a bit more experience with product management, what do you have any thoughts or questions about this?
If I think of any, I'll let you know.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, please remember this is a peer group, so please chime in. It's okay to interrupt, okay? And in fact, it's even okay to disagree. Just don't throw food, okay?
My understanding about the product manager is solve the market problem.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. And that's what we're going to talk about next, is really how to focus on that problem, okay? Because that is the most critical thing. So there's a guy named Steve Blank, who some of you may have heard about. He's a famous Silicon Valley entrepreneur and VC, and he's written a number of interesting books. I think his most famous, I think, is like Six Steps to Epiphany or something like that. Anyway, so it's mostly about startups and being successful there. But he's sort of the responsible for this saying that you should fall in love with the problem, not your solution. So what happens a lot in technology, especially when it's, you know, sort of driven by engineering, is that, you know, we're excited and, you know, interested in, you know, in building technology and seeing what's possible. But we often jump to that too quickly, and we don't really spend enough time understanding the problem. And I often tell startups that I work with that, you know, this is not uncommon. I mean, it's a human trait, right? We're uncomfortable with uncertainty. And so when somebody tells you about a problem, you know, you have a friend that says, oh, I got this terrible problem, blah, 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 blah. And instead of asking questions about, oh, tell me more about that. Usually we jump to, you know, oh, here's what you should do. Here's the solution. You should do this, this, and this, right? And how often do we actually pause and ask more questions about, oh, help me understand the problem a bit more. So that's kind of what, you know, Steve is encouraging. Don't get swept up by the elegance of your own solution, your own baby there, but try to focus on the problem first. And so the last part
maybe this is partially a comment and partially a question. The problem is exceptionally nuanced in so much as A, humans have no idea what their problem is. We like to think we know what our problem is, but we don't really know what our problem is. Attitudinal and behavioral responses differ greatly. But then also, you know, if I think of the jobs to be done framework, people might claim they have a problem, and then we might go, great, I've got a great way to solve the problem, only to later find out that realistically they already had a solution and ours isn't better enough or better enough in the right way to displace the former solution.
Right, right. No, excellent question or statement. I think, you know, it's, and I'll make, you know, I'll sort of walk you through a couple of thoughts around that, because you're absolutely right. It can be very complex. And oftentimes, you know, what customers say their problem is not really what the problem is. So, you know, you really have to become a kind of anthropologist and get to the root cause of the problem, right? And then understand, to your point, is this a significant problem, right? Is the impact big, significant enough that it's worth us solving it? Do enough other people in the market have the similar problem that we can actually build a sustainable business around it, right? And so those are the kind of questions. And what is their current solution? How do they currently handle it? Is it good enough? Or, you know, or is there an underserved need that that, you know, that we could create high value with if we solved it, right?
Sure. And when selling to enterprise, I think another aspect is, are we solving a, even if it's material to that person, does that person have the influence and control to change how money is spent?
Yes. True. Yeah. And there's
a difference. Even if it is the perfect problem with the perfect solution and it's material and they don't have another way to solve it today, they still might not be able to buy the product.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, why there's a difference in journey maps between a user journey and a buyer journey, right? You know, they have in, especially in a B2B world, an enterprise, they have different motivations, different objectives, different, you know, challenges. Not so much in B2C, because most of the time, you know, the buyer is the user, but certainly in B2B, it is way more complex for sure. Yeah. So let me talk to, thanks Everett for that. I appreciate it. Steve Johnson is one of the early founders and instructors at Pragmatic back in, you know, long time ago. And he now is out on his own, has been for a number of years, but does a lot of writing on stuff. And he was with us at the TPMA about a year or two ago, I think. And he sort of showed us this framework, which I think is fantastic. So I want to walk you through it quickly, just to kind of help you see the perspective of why focusing on problems is so critical and how you do it. Okay. And so, you know, his proposition was that, you know, we have, in an organization, some of the things we do are for the market and some are for individual customers. So oftentimes, you know, we'll write requirements for a market of customers, but requirements for a single customer is usually more like a statement of work, okay? And then, you know, we might, if we write, you know, frequently asked questions for lots of different customers, if we do something similar for a single customer, it's more like an RFP or an RFI. And so, you know, if you take this perspective and you write down all the things that we do and you add them to this, you'll get, you know, sort of something that looks like this, where, you know, some items are focused more on the market and some items are focused more on individual customers. And if you're in sales or support, you know, most of your activity should be focused on customers. Customer things are really important. And to make sure that we're adding value and satisfying individual customers, right? And so when you're in sales or services or support, that's the primary responsibility. So RFPs and demos should be owned by the sales team, you know, SOWs should be owned by professional services, and customer requests for information should be, you know, handled by support. And if we further break that down, we can look at the market in kind of two sides. And if I take those two sides, I can say there's sort of problems that the market has, and there are solutions for the market that the market has. And then things that are, you know, sort of activities around specific customers are, you know, more, we would categorize more as sort of delivery activities, okay? So customer discovery, we visit a number of customers, not just one, to understand the kinds of problems that they might have, right? And that are common amongst different customers. What we learn from multiple customers, then we, you know, write stories that apply to multiple customers or requirements. We prototype a potential solution and we test that with multiple customers, and then we build a feature that satisfies the need for multiple customers, okay? Likewise, we sort of find problems in the way we promote and market the product. So, you know, so we might look at win-loss analysis, then the solution might be video testimonials or sales coaching, which kind of crosses over into, you know, working with individual customers, that sort of thing. But still, you know, we want to keep this perspective of sort of problems and solutions, okay? So solutions, yeah.
So would you find out about the problems? Is that more like a qualitative research thing?
It's both. It's both. And you know, that's another sort of thing you learn as you gain more experience is that, you know, qualitative data or research is just as important as quantitative, but they serve two different purposes. Okay. So quantitative gives you the evidence that something is happening, but it doesn't explain why it's happening. And that's what qualitative research is for. It helps you to understand the motivations, the rationale, you know, the understanding of why it's happening. And so you really want to be using the two together as much as possible.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so Steve's proposition, which I mostly agree with, but I think is open to debate, is that solutions is not the primary responsibility of a product manager. Problems are really the focus of a product manager. Solutions come from a multidisciplinary effort between product development and marketing. And so that's really the kind of a way to look at it that helps, you know, keep you focused on what's the real job of product management. And so looking at this, you know, in terms of roles, you know, product is focused primarily on problems. Development and marketing are focused on the solutions, having known what the problems are or having understood what the problems are. And then delivery is really the responsibility of sales, services, and support. Okay. And so as you're thinking about an organization, you know, you want to be thinking about some time frames as well. So, you know, there's now and there's future. So, okay, so who's focused on which, right? And in this case, you know, product management is really looking at future. What are we going to build? What do we need to build? What do we want to build? And then, or what problems do we want to solve? And then, you know, product marketing is really focused on what's right now. What do we need to do right now? But you can also say that there's a now, next, and future, right? And so that implies, you know, sort of a prioritization, working in not necessarily different roles, but different kinds of activities. So, you know, product strategy would really be the future planning or sort of the future vision. And then, you know, product planning clearly is getting things lined up. And then product growth is really focused on, you know, how do we maximize the success of this right now? And so you get then out of that a number of different roles. So you get a product manager who's focused on the future direction, a product owner who typically is working with the development team in a Scrum, mostly in a Scrum environment, like a Scrum Master, who's managing the backlog and the prioritization of things with development. And then the product marketing manager who's working on stuff that is delivered and is being taken to market. And so in the end, you get this kind of, you know, matrix here, which I think helps, you know, when all hell's breaking loose and you're trying to do everything, helps you to focus on, you know, alignment with other parts of the organization, and that product management's real role is to focus on the right strategy and the right problems, and then to work with other parts of the organization to actually solve those and deliver them. So hopefully that helps give you some perspective, you know, focus on the problems, empower the teams that solve them. And that is part of not the only success, but that's the part of success in bringing successful products to the market. Okay, so now it's time to open it up. I hope that sort of gave you a little bit of food for thought. I'd love to hear from any of you, all of you, you know, about sort of what challenges do you face in looking at problems in your market? Because you know, a lot of organizations focus on features and don't really spend enough time focusing on the problem. So what challenges are you facing? And you know, how, for those of you that are sort of working on that, how have you explored and discovered those problems?
Lee, this is Sam. Can I ask you to go back to a couple of pages to that page where he had, you know, strategy and, that one.
Yeah.
One more. Okay. So, interestingly, like, you know, I was going to ask you about strategy, and you classified them under problems. And my question is that, you know, I look at these, you know, strategies and planning and growth as opportunities more than problems. So my question is that the role, sort of the way it's framed in the last piece of conversation, I apologize, I missed part of it because I had somebody coming in. It sounds to me or looks to me as if it's more of a delivery responsibility of the whole piece of the product and shaping it. And in my mind, you know, the product manager is sort of the person who should not only, you know, provide, you know, the execution piece, but the vision piece too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm looking, yeah, you know, iPhone is fantastic. Great job, Steve, you know, Jobs, bless your soul and things like that. And but the product owner, the product manager is the end of the day, the person who delivered it and not Steve Jobs sitting there in the basement, you know, he put all these pieces together and delivered it to the market, right?
Well, he, you know, he's a bit unusual, so I wouldn't hold him up as the sort of paradigm of perfect product management. But still, you know, I think it absolutely takes a team, and it's a team approach. And so, you know, there are certain roles in that team, bringing skills and expertise and focus to certain parts of it. But you're absolutely right. It's the, you know, there's a vision, product vision part that the product manager absolutely should own, along with maybe senior executives or the founder. And then there's a, you know, there's a sort of building the right solution to solve that vision or achieve that vision, and then the delivery of it. And that takes a cross-functional team. And it's not that the product manager is responsible for the delivery of it, but they need to be the cross-functional leader to ensure that delivery is successful, right? And so, you know, unless you're a sole founding entrepreneur, in which case you are the de facto product manager, then you probably have to do everything right. But as soon as an organization gets beyond a few people, then it becomes more of which one did I have here? Maybe more like this, right? So, you know, so there's a couple of people that work together on understanding the problem, working with customers. Then there's a team that helps to ideate and put together solutions. And then there's a collaboration with development teams to actually deliver it. Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, because I you know, it's a role that I've, you know, found that extremely critical and interesting at the right time in an organization's growth. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is, you know, it needs to be defined very well, you know, when adopting, you know, such a function in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And let's be clear, you know, it does change over time as an organization grows, right? I mean, you know, in the early stages as a product manager, you know, or a founder, you're very, you know, focused on tactical activities and, you know, getting things done. You know, as an organization grows, you know, and you move into more of a management role, then it's really providing air cover and, you know, facilitating product managers to do that job, right? Yeah. So, yeah, so it does change for sure. And also based on the maturity of the organization and product. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, early stage startup, it's all about discovery and testing and validating things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after you're, you know, sort of a more growth stage or scale up or mature company, then it's more about, you know, maximizing the efficiency and you know, leveraging, you know, market expansion and things like that. So it does change for sure.
Hey Lee, it's Ryan. I have a question for Everett. I know that with MyPlanet, they probably have the bigger product team on the call. Just wanted to know how the last 6 months have gone and how my planet has been able to continue developing product with people being remote, and has the last 6-7 months stifled productivity? You know, have things been put on the back burner? Sure. Or, you know, how have you guys like progressed, or how have you guys dealt with the last six to seven months?
Well, how have any of us? actually a whole lot better than maybe I initially thought we might, which is good. We've always been an organization that's been pretty open to distributed work. And, you know, we like to look at our teams as accountable for outcomes, but autonomous in how they achieve those outcomes. And so we have teams who prefer all sitting in a room together and focusing around a table. And we've got teams who prefer the opposite of that. We've got, you know, people who say, if you need this thing done in 2 days, then you all have to stop talking to me, and I'll let you know when I come up from here, if I have questions. So, like, I think our culture was already pretty well suited to the idea that maybe there's somebody in, you know, Europe, and there's a couple people in BC, and maybe they're on a project together. So I think we were a lot more ready for remote working. We've got Google Hangouts. We've been a Chromebox company for years. We've got, you know, I think we were all ready for that. Now, what I think, so that's all the tactical bits. Then comes like just the, you know, needing to have empathy because people don't turn off being a person when they start working in the morning. And we're all bringing, you know, we all have always brought baggage into work. That's how humans work. But, you know, in the last 6-7 months, there's been a lot more people have had more baggage. So I think just, and again, as a company, we've got a culture around, you know, humanity. We have, you know, regularly invested in things like mindfulness training for our teams. So I think we've just, I think whether it was by good luck or good management over the years, we built up a lot of those enduring foundations around how we handle preferred work styles, how we handle remote work, how we handle teams that aren't geographically co-located, and how we give people those coping skills around their kind of emotional intelligence factors. I think all of those helped the last 6 months be a lot more productive than maybe they otherwise could have been.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great, Everett. It's nice to hear. And I was saying at the beginning when we were just joining the call and chatting, that I started with a couple of colleagues of mine in the product community, a daily Zoom event called At Product AMA. So ask me anything. And we ended up 40 events with 40 product leaders across all different industries, mostly in the GTA, but across North America. And we recorded them all. They're all on YouTube if you want to go check them out. But you know, I'm just reinforcing what you're saying is that a lot of some organizations were not well prepared, but a lot of technology companies, you know, were already doing some kind of remote work. So they were used to it. What was a challenge was to go to 100% remote work. But by and large, it increased adaptability and empathy for sure, especially amongst the product leaders and managers who, I mean, I remember one guy from, you know, who's head of like VP of product at Bell, you know, said, I mean, he has a huge team, right? And he said, I had no idea that some of my, you know, team are single mothers living in a small condo with a small child. And like, it's tough for them to, you know, to be sort of 8 hours at work in that kind of environment. And so we've had to adapt to allow them to work when they could. And almost all of the product leaders said that they've seen better productivity, higher satisfaction, better morale amongst their teams in this kind of environment, because there was more adaptability and empathy. So just, you know. Yeah.
And we did a Q&A Q&A this week, and one of the questions that came up was, you know, can I move out of the GTA now? Can I move out of the GTA? You know, when this is all over, are we going to keep this, you know, ability for employees to either choose to work from home or come into like, it's not that people are actually like, oh no, this has been great. And I mean, it all depends on your introverts, I assume, love the shit out of this. And extroverts like myself are like, my wife's like, you are so loud every time you're on a phone call. It's just you and the person on the phone call. Why can I hear you two floors away in the house? I'm like, the duct work, dear. It's the duct work. It's
no, the other person you're talking to is a long ways away, you know?
Exactly.
But they're a long ways away, you know? Yeah, I know. I know the feeling. I'm exactly the same. But so let me segue from that, you know, for a moment, because I think Ryan is a great question. And that's, you know, what kind of challenges does remote working now present to being a product person trying to focus on customer problems? You know, that means talking to customers a lot. Like, you know, we say, you know, Pragmatic's famous saying is nihito, nothing important happens in the office. You have to get out and talk to customers all the time, right? So what kind of challenges are you facing talking to customers?
Well, and Lee, that was a question I was going to even have, kind of the one that you have here, is how do you go about and explore and discover problems when you are in a remote environment? Because sometimes it's nicer to be a bit hands-on to sort of see what's happening. So how do people go about doing that now?
Yeah, I mean, you can still talk to customers. Mm-hmm. The issue is that body language and those sorts of things that we all rely on, right? And we've taken those for granted for so long. Now we're actually more hypersensitive to them. So, but tell me, like, who amongst you have been talking to customers in the last 4 or 5 months? Yeah. And Peter, tell me what's that been like? Like, is it different? Have you found ways to make it efficient or effective, or discovered things, learned things?
It's kind of been a bit different talking to customers. Some of them, you could tell, haven't been talking to any people lately. So they just want to talk. So you can have longer conversations and they'll tell you everything. Mm-hmm. Then some customers really just don't want to talk. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of got to talk to your customer and try and understand what market, like who they're dealing with, and see how applicable that is to the rest of the market that you're trying to serve.
Right. Right. Good. Good. Anybody else? Who else has been talking to customers?
Lee, I had a call this week with one of our members, and I don't know if this is maybe the right forum. This might be for the marketing peer group, but people that have, I guess he was really adamant about cynical marketing right now. And cynical marketing is really big, that people talk about how they've pivoted to deal with COVID and are offering these different products. But in the end, it's still the same product that they're offering. Are you seeing some of that?
Oh yeah. It's kind of like greenwashing in climate in clean tech, right? It's like, okay, are they just using the words, or is there real value there, right?
Because one of the things he was worried about is this stuff's going to come to bite people in the butt who are using a lot of cynical marketing, because it's they think they're doing something special for people during this time, but in the end, it's still the same product. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
But that goes back to this problem focus, right? And so of those 40 product leaders I talked to, in the last few months, like almost all of them, when you said, okay, what changed for you? They almost all said, we went back to our customers and listened carefully to what had changed for them, right? We just all hands on deck, everybody go out and talk to customers and figure out what's changing for them. What's not important anymore? What's more important now? And how do we adjust our value proposition to make sure that we're solving the problem for them, right? And that's the core of it. Like, if you are doing that, and then, you know, you kind of reposition your product without much changes in it, maybe that's okay if you've deeply understood what the problem is. But if you're just trying to, you know, get growth without really listening to what your customers' problems are, then yeah, that's kind of temporary, right? But customers have changed, right? I mean, you know, we're all more dependent on online technology now. We're all looking for more social interaction, you know, without physical presence. We're spending money on comforts at home. I mean, so our needs have changed, right? And so, you know, companies, you know, that are sensitive to that and recognize that are the ones that are succeeding.
I think too, from Peter's perspective, because Peter even said, we're talking to people and people are willing to open up, they're willing to talk. And I think it has allowed a lot of us an opportunity to actually listen. Mm-hmm. And before, you know, you were maybe rushed, you weren't always kind of talking to people. And so you didn't take that time to listen. Right. And I think, you know, it was always kind of in passing, maybe you related seeing somebody with, oh yeah, I've had a conversation with them, but now they're actual conversations. You're taking the time to hear some problems. Right. And, you know, Everett had said earlier is that sometimes you talk to somebody and you understand their problem and what you have doesn't really, it's not that it solves it. It doesn't solve it better than what they had before. And that's always not always a bad problem too, or a bad thing, because I think then, you know, it's that honesty of, okay, what you have is working and we'll revisit something later. You know, I look at from perspective of the company that we go to or the little store that we go to buy our glasses, and they never wanna, you know, to buy the frames and stuff is what costs them money. That's their product, but they're not always trying to upsell you. So I'm always happy to go back in there. I've had kind of the same glasses. I kind of look back and forth at a bunch of different ones, and they could very easily say, oh yeah, buy those. But a lot of times, no, I like the ones you already have. Let's just put new lenses in. So you go back and you become, I guess, the trusted advisor, that kind of key word.
Yeah, I think, you know, more of us are looking at the lifetime value of a customer. Mm-hmm. So it's not the individual transaction, but it's the commitment and loyalty over time. You know, a lot of us are more curious now. Like, you know, I mean, you know the expression for salespeople, right? ABC, always be closing. Mm-hmm. For me in product management, it's always be curious, right? It's just like always ask questions, be curious, dig deeper into the why is, you know, something is happening or a problem, right? And I, you know, also remember Toyota was the initiator of lean manufacturing, right? And there's the Toyota, you know, sort of way is like the five whys, right? You ask why five times in order to get to the root cause of a problem, right? And until you do that, you often don't really deeply understand it. And you try it sometime and you'll be fascinated that by the fifth why, you start to go, oh, and you see the problem in a whole different way, right? So it's fascinating, but yes, be curious, listen, ask questions, you know, that sort of thing for sure.
I was just about to mention the five whys, Lee.
I should have let you mention.
No, that's fine. It can feel awkward. Like you can be sitting there thinking, well, I've already asked why four times. The person's going to think I'm crazy if I ask it a fifth time, but they don't. Mm-hmm. Because it's, well, I have this problem, you know, or whatever the problem is. And this is the impact it has. I mean, it's like, well, why? And the why is a why to each subsequent problem. It's not
right.
Or each statement. It's not asking why to one question five times, because it does keep getting you, you know, deeper and deeper.
Right.
And if they kind of, you know, if they say a few words and then they're pausing, give them space to think. Mm-hmm. And give them, you know, some thinking time. Don't feel that you have to fill the silence
right
when you're doing this kind of discovery session, interview session, or, you know, probing session with someone. Give them space. Right. And another good phrase is just tell me more.
Right. Yeah. In fact, you know, one of the sort of principles of open-ended discovery interviews is be curious. Ask about how somebody does something, not about the problem directly. And when you start to sense some emotion in it, then pause and say something like, interesting, tell me more about that, right? And just like completely open-ended, and you will learn all kinds of stuff, right? So don't lead the witness, don't try to sell, just be curious about the problem, right? But so we're almost out of time here, but so I want to respect your time here, but any sort of closing comments or questions that we could take offline, or we can build another session around? What's your feedback?
Yeah, that's it. What I was going to say, the next one we think is October 15th, correct, Lee? So
okay.
If there's, you know, if there was something that you thought would be really valuable for you in terms of, okay, you have some ideas. Lee is such an expert on things and is really valuable with that. So don't be shy.
Yeah.
I guess, I think Everett, I'm not sure, Everett dropped off, so I'm not sure what happened there. He would have had, he'll probably have some good insights. I'll follow back up with Everett.
Okay.
Just to see where he's at. He probably has more things that he wants to talk about. So
sure.
I'll follow up with Everett and
Sure, yeah. We can take these beer groups any direction you want. So what I'm relying on is questions from you about challenges that you're facing that we can talk about. Okay. So think about those challenges you're facing and then, you know, send them to Ryan and Kelly and we'll build a discussion around it. Okay. It's great to see you all. Take care and have a really good day. Be safe and be healthy. And I'm available online, so reach out to me anytime. I'm happy to help or chat about something. And if you're interested in the TPMA meetings, tpma.ca, they're all free to anybody right now while they're online. And there's one coming up next Tuesday night on the 29th. That's a panel discussion that should be pretty interesting. So with awesome. That, I will
sign off. Thank you, Lee. Thanks, everybody.
Lee.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.